Today on Musket Peace Theater, the Smoking Musket podcast presents A Journey Through Facebook.
Quote, "You couldn't hack it, so you threw the baby out with the bathwater. You could have just kept it short on weekdays. You could have collaborated. You could have passed it on to a younger WVU fan writer. You could have gotten different women. I mean, hell, don't penalize us because your taste in women is the kind of BS that makes women feel bad about themselves. Rubbish. As a fan of this page, I can easily say that I'm effing tired of you assholes blaming your kids. Man up, assholes. You all are not working hard enough." That was in response to me having my one-year-old home on Monday and not getting up, like, the link article. Like, I was cleaning up puke and just ready to jump off a cliff Monday. The last thing I wanted to do was post an article.
Yeah, I'd be like, y'all stop being dumb.
And now,
you are listening live.
Handoff, Kennedy McCoy cuts it back inside. He's at five, heading to the end zone. He's in, touchdown! Drops, throws, has a man. Ball caught Jennings. Gary Jennings breaks the tackle. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5, end zone. Touchdown, Gary Jennings! And it is a great night to be a Mountaineer, wherever you may be.
Hi, Godders. Welcome to this week's episode of the Smoking Musket Podcast. Whew, it's already week 9 of the college football season, but, you know, as fast as the season seems to be passing by, we are getting into the big matchups in conference play, and honestly, one of the best games of the weekend is going to happen for our Mountaineers this weekend, WVU versus Oklahoma State on Saturday. To preview this, recording from outside the heart of college football, I am Bart Keeler, and I am joined by site manager of www.smokingmusket.com, Mike Miller. Mike, it has been a while. Good to hear from you again.
It has been a while, and the haters said I wouldn't do it, but hi, haters.
Well, I'm proud of you for coming on. I'm glad that we were able to find some time to make this work. Big matchup coming up, but before we get into all this episode, Mike, why don't you let our listeners in on how they can find us on all of our platforms?
Yeah, you can find the Smoking Musket podcast on all your normal podcast apps, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher Radio. And you can find us just by searching for the Smoking Musket podcast. You can listen to our live call-in show every Monday evening by going to blogtalkradio.com/smokingmusket. Bart's doing a pretty good job with that. Throw him some calls.
Me.
Yeah, call him. Throw him some tweets. Give him some content.
Yeah.
And don't forget, on Saturday, really all through the week, we've set a phone number up for WVU fans to call in and give your thoughts and whatnot before and during and after the game. And if you call in, leave a message at this number, you could hear yourself on the live show Monday. We'll go through and play those voicemails. That number is 304-933-9880. And most importantly, visit smokingmusket.com for daily news, notes, and opinions on West Virginia sports.
Yeah, I mean, we do these things to get you all to interact. We are first and foremost a site run by fans, right? So, like, we're fans as well, as much as we try to be somewhat professional and I don't want to say unbiased, but somewhat objective. We're fans, so we want to interact with other fans. So please call the voicemail, call me on Mondays, go to our site, you know, comment on the post. We would love to have the interaction from you all. Mike, before we – I want to get your thoughts on the season as a whole, but before we get into any more football, let's catch some other WVU sports headlines.
Let's roll.
Bob Huggins, Javon Carter, and Daxter Miles Jr. visited Big 12 Media Days this week to represent WVU men's basketball. The trio were decked out in bow ties, vests, and two-toned shoes, making them the best-dressed team at Big 12 Media Days. The Mountaineers will host a charity exhibition against Albany on Saturday, October 28th at 7:30 p.m. in the WVU Coliseum, with proceeds from the game going to the American Red Cross's hurricane relief effort. So if you're in Morgantown, if you're staying in Morgantown on Sunday, or if you're just in the area, go to on Saturday, go to the WVU Coliseum for the men's basketball exhibition game. With a 2-under-par score at the Travis Scott Collegiate Invitational that ended on Tuesday, Max Sear placed 11th. That was held at the Islesworth Golf Club, Golf and Country Club in Windmere, Florida. A great showing for him. Look, this is fall golf for the men's golf team. They're in their second year, and they've had a couple of second-place finishes and now some great individual efforts. So they will wrap up next week their fall schedule. The number 25 WVU men's soccer team downed Penn 1-0 at home on Tuesday night. Jorge Quintanilla tucked away the game-winning goal in the 65th minute to push the Mountaineers to 8-4-4 on the season. Now WVU will take on MAC opponent Akron on Friday at home. So, hey, you come in early, you can get some men's soccer action in a very anticipated matchup for the WVU Mountaineers. Ali Magaleta and Bianca St. George were named Big 12 Soccer Offensive and Defensive Players of the Week, respectively. The number 5 RPI Mountaineers will wrap up the 2017 regular season this Friday at 8 p.m. in Lawrence, Kansas, against KU. Next Wednesday, the Big 12 Soccer Championship will kick off in Swope Park, Kansas. WVU is currently the second-place team in the Big 12. This could be the first year that we don't win the Big 12 regular season since joining the conference in 2012. However, first-place Oklahoma State has to travel to Austin, Texas to take on the third-place Longhorns. On Sunday, the number 15 and reigning Big 12 tournament champions, WVU women's basketball team will host the Haunted Hoops exhibition against West Virginia Wesleyan at 4 p.m. If you want to come early at 2 p.m., they're going to be hosting a trunk or treat event. If you've ever done one of those at your church, you can come and be a part of that. It'll be in the RV parking lots just outside of the Coliseum. And the final headline, this does have to do with football. The 2018 WVU football schedule has been released. We kind of knew what it was. I mean, it's no secret, but it's nice to see it all laid out. The Mountaineers will take on 2 Power 5 teams to start the season. We'll travel to Charlotte to take on Tennessee on Saturday, September 1st, to open the season. Come home and take on Youngstown State, and then travel to Raleigh for a matchup against NC State on September 15th. WVU will open Big 12 play on Saturday, September 22nd at home against Kansas. And we will wrap up the regular season on Friday, November 23rd. So that's the Friday after Thanksgiving at home against Oklahoma. For a full breakdown, go to check out www.smokingmusket.com. So that's all the headlines I have for you this week. Mike, before turning the page to week 9 and this Oklahoma State team, I'd love to hear your thoughts on last week's win over Baylor. What was your overall takeaway from the game?
I really don't know. this team is such – there's still such a big question mark with this team. I don't know what to think about them. We were in the driver's seat for that game. We were killing them. And just – I kind of called it, too. I was like, we're going to fall asleep right here and let them back into this game. Of course.
And what did we do?
We fell asleep and let them back into the game. it's the same thing we did against Kansas.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hopefully.
Well, now here's what I got to ask you, because this is something that I think a lot of people debated. Was, look, you saw 23 points given up in the fourth quarter. Is that on the defense or the offense? Because the offense scored 0 times in the fourth quarter. If you score once in the fourth quarter, this is a hell of a lot easier ball game. Is that defensive execution or offensive execution?
I kind of got to put it on the offense. They left the defense on the field pretty much the whole fourth quarter.
Yes.
Because, I mean, what, they had like one or two drives in the fourth quarter, and it was basically like three and out, both drives, I think.
After we scored our 38 points, after we scored that last touchdown, in the third quarter, I think we ran like 14 total plays.
Yeah. I mean, we were on the field and off like quick. Because we were calling in just ridiculous plays. Like, I don't.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's, I mean, look, Baylor, we talked about this last week on the podcast. Baylor still has talent. Like, they still have guys who are talented. They still have a lot of talent on the offensive side of the ball. So
yeah, they do, and they're just
young. They're not incapable of scoring. And they caught fire when you know, they changed quarterbacks. It was like, okay, cool, but why couldn't our offense do anything? Justin Crawford was held to less than 100 yards for two straight weeks. Does that concern you?
Yeah, it does. And I don't know if that's...
he had a really long run of 100-yard games, and now all of a sudden, nothing.
He had, like, what, six straight 100-yard games, yeah. I think. I don't know if that's play calling or if that's on Crawford.
I don't know. Honestly. Either. I don't know.
It kind of feels like he's lost a step or something. Like he's in some slump. Yeah. Which, this is the worst time to be slumping.
Yes. Well, and also you look at kind of offensively, we're doing okay with calling run plays, but I still feel like we could use it a little bit more. But our run calls have been kind of basic. I mean, granted, you have a zone read, it's fine, but I just feel like they've been basic.
Yeah, I have no idea what's going on with the play calling.
Yeah. Well,
hopefully it's figured out before Saturday.
Yeah, because we have a team coming in who will control the clock and control the tempo of the game very well. But, hey, we won in Waco, something we hadn't done before, so that's good, right?
Yeah, it could have been a lot worse.
This is true. Well, all right. So that's all that matters. We won. We're 5-2. Let's close that chapter and move on to week 9. And to do that, I'm bringing on Joel Penfield from Cowboys Ride for Free. He does their 2-minute drill, Periscope, and he is going to give us some really good insight into what has made Oklahoma State probably a little bit better than what we've seen in the past. So stick around and listen to the interview that I did with Joel Penfield here in part 2. And then in part 3, Mike and I will break down our take on the WVU Oklahoma State game on Saturday. Don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. Don't let them pick guitars or drive them old trucks. Let them be doctors and lawyers and such. Mama, don't let your babies grow up to be cowboys. 'Cause they never stay home and they're always alone, even with someone they love. Bye, Godders. Welcome back to this week's edition of the Smoking Musket podcast. This is Bart Keeler, and we are getting ready to dive deep into the Oklahoma State Cowboys and the pretty good football season they've had so far. To do this, I am joined by a contributor to Cowboys Ride for Free, our brother SB Nation site for Oklahoma State sports. He runs their 2-minute drill, and he also contributes from a podcast perspective and writing perspective. That's Joel Penfield. You can follow him on Twitter at JPPenfield. Joel, thanks for coming on tonight. You do a lot of stuff for Cowboys Ride for Free. What all are you involved with over there?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it, and I'm excited to represent Cowboys Ride for Free here on your guys' podcast. But I do a lot of different stuff. I'm a staff writer. I've been on for a little over a year now. I joined last football season. And then this year, I tried going a little more toward the media side as we tried to kind of find some new stuff to do for the site and try and get our viewership up and our page views up. And I started doing a live Periscope and Facebook Live show called the 2-Minute Drill, where I talk about Oklahoma State football and football in general, you know, just a little quick hit PTI style discussion points. And then I recently started a podcast with a former Oklahoma State baseball player named Trey Cobb. It's called the Bush League Podcast. And we put it out through Cowboys Drive for free, but we talk about Major League Baseball, college football in general, NFL, and we just try and, you know, make it an all sports podcast.
Very nice. Yeah, I very much enjoy your 2-minute drill thing. It's one, entertaining, and two, it's nice to have some kind of deep perspective from the opposition. But I'm glad you're here. I know this is kind of a – I know I'm nervous on my side. I hope you guys are nervous because I feel like this is one of those games that I'm not saying it could go either way, but it's definitely a game that deserves some nerves from both fan bases. This is a very, in my opinion, an important game for both the Cowboys and the Mountaineers. What are your initial – thoughts on this game going down on Saturday in Morgantown?
This was the game, besides Bedlam, obviously, that I circled on the calendar when it came out and said, this is going to be the toughest road game Oklahoma State has. And because going to Morgantown, Oklahoma State has never played well there. In 2013, Oklahoma State, I think, was the better team in that game. And West Virginia came out and punched them in the mouth and won. And then in 15, it took J.W. Walsh coming in for a young Mason Rudolph in overtime to win that game. So I haven't seen Oklahoma State play well there. West Virginia always plays us tough. So this is going to be a challenge and definitely a kind of a knockdown, drag out fight. And thankfully it's 11 a.m. If it was a night game, I would feel even worse. So I'm glad that we got the 11 a.m. kick.
I'm just going to point this out there. The last time y'all lost in Morgantown, it was a noon kickoff in Morgantown. I'm just throwing that out there.
Well, I know. I know, but that was a J.W. Walsh who was not as experienced in that one. That was a rough day.
Yeah. I mean, look, I think both teams are at – I mean, we look at the standings. They're both 3-1 in conference play, but both teams are kind of – well, I know West Virginia is kind of playing above billing, but for the most part, both teams are doing what they've expected to do this season. Oklahoma State is really efficient for the most part on offense, playing defense where they can, but – what do you think the difference between this team in 2017 is, as opposed to some other teams, you know, in the past, especially Mason Rudolph-led teams?
I think this is one of the best offenses I've ever seen Oklahoma State have, and I've been a fan my entire life. So I've seen a lot of different Oklahoma State teams, especially in the Mike Gundy era. But we have a true pocket passer. I mean, I think Brandon Whedon was one of the best quarterbacks in school's history, and I think Mason Rudolph's even going to surpass him if he can – continue to win this year, win Bedlam, get us to a New Year's Six Bowl. I think he kind of becomes one of the greatest in school history. But I think what's different about this team is that they've always had the offensive weapons, but it's on the defensive side of the ball that I've been the most impressed with.
Yeah.
And this team obviously gets a lot of comparisons to the 2011 team because of how good they are and the expectations. But the difference between the 2011 and 2017 teams for me is the fact that the 2011 team, they weren't great defensively. They gave up a lot of points, a lot of yards, but they got a lot of turnovers. This team isn't giving up a lot of points, and they're, you know, stopping guys on third down, plus the turnovers on top of that. So to me, the defensive side of the ball has been extremely impressive to me. I mean, granted, Baylor's not that good. They've been getting better, and we give up 16 points to them, and then we go and play Texas. And even though Sam Ellinger, you know, is young, he's very talented. They have talented players there, and we give up 10 points. So to have back-to-back great defensive games in a row is something I haven't seen with an Oklahoma State team in a long time.
Well, you mentioned that defense, and I know everyone loves to talk about Oklahoma State's offense, and then they like to hate on Oklahoma State's defense. And I think that's the lazy narrative that we get from a lot of the national broadcasters. But, I mean, look, y'all are giving up right above 22 points a game, which is – I mean, that's a pretty low number. And especially a stingy run defense. What's the truth about Oklahoma State's defense? I mean, what are we not looking at that, or what are the national media not looking at that, you know, is right before your eyes?
Well, I mean, it's the narrative in the Big 12 that, you know, in reality, you're having a good defensive game if you hold a Big 12 team under 30 points. But the reality is, with the high-powered offenses, the national media and the narrative is, oh, these defenses aren't that good because everyone's just scoring points. But it's quite the opposite. The defenses are really good, but the offenses and the talent and the speed and the athleticism on the offensive side of the ball is just that much better. When you look at the Big 12 in bowl games, their defenses are incredible, and they are able to stop some high-powered offenses. Yeah. But it's just the fact that the Big 12 is based on speed and athleticism, which is something you don't see in other conferences, especially like the Big 10 and the SEC, where it's the biggest guys you can possibly find, and you're maybe not going to see the same caliber of athletes. But what's different is this big – this team is just based on speed on both sides of the ball. And the speed sideline to sideline that our linebackers have and our safeties have is something that I've never seen before. We have, you know, Calvin Bundage and Kenneth Edison Magruder, Justin Phillips, Chad Whitener, who I think is the best linebacking core in the Big 12, just as a unit, not necessarily Ovo Aronquo at OU's on another level, Malik Jefferson, but I think as a unit, that's probably the best position group in the Big 12.
Interesting take. I mean, look, they gave up a lot of points to TCU, obviously. That game was kind of uncharacteristic across the board for Oklahoma State. But like you said,
it was
16 points, 10 points to Texas, and a very weird Texas game that was.
That was one of the weirdest games I've ever watched.
I didn't laugh during the game, but I think after it ended, I kind of laughed because, like, what did I just watch? That was not supposed to be Oklahoma State versus Texas. I mean, like, why was that game so difficult for you guys?
One thing that was different, at least for me, and kind of infuriating just as a fan, was Mike Gundy and Mike Yurcich, the offensive coordinator, they're very good usually about adjusting in-game to what the defense is giving us, and they really didn't. Texas pretty much, they rushed three and dropped eight the entire game. So they were pretty much baiting Oklahoma State into running. And then the minute the Mason Ralph audibled into a run play, they would crash. And we would get 2-3 yards a game, you know, two, three yards. I talked about it on the 2-minute drill a lot. It was like the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. Ran the ball 51 times for about $1.42, which with 3.7 yards a carry, I think is what it came out to. So it was like we were beating our head into a wall at times, trying to just do the same thing over and over again because they took away the deep ball.
But, Mason, I mean, this is what I guess confused me about that. Mason Rudolph is too good of a quarterback to be not let loose, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
It kept getting to the point where it's like, when are you going to just let Mason Rudolph run the show? Because in my opinion, he was probably the most talented player out there that game.
Oh, you're absolutely right. It was, again, that was the infuriating part too, but I hate the part of the fan base. They're like, oh, we just need to throw the ball. Well, that's not what the defense is giving us. Like, if you actually watch the game, they had 5-6 DBs in there the entire game. They were playing back at 15, 20 yards, so there's nothing over the top. And even though Mason Rolfe is a good quarterback, he's not as consistent short to intermediate, so you're not going to take a chance and, you know, have him, you know, overthrow a slant for a pick six. So at that point, we just took our lumps and we saw how good the defense was playing, and we knew, okay, we just need 13, 17 points, and we can win this game.
Yeah.
So we pretty much let the defense – we trusted the defense to win the game, which I've never seen in the Big 12, let alone just with Oklahoma State.
Well, I mean, look, we know Mason Rudolph is really good. He's thrown for like 1 million yards in his career at Oklahoma State. But who's the next most important player on your offense?
That's a really good question, actually. But I'm going to go with Marcel Aitman. You know, everyone loves James Washington. He's kind of the sexy pick to win the Biletnikoff, and I think he will. You know, obviously you guys have a good competitor there in David Phillips.
He's
an absolute freak. He's an absolute freak, and that's not knocking him at all. Right now, but I do think Washington is the sexy pick right now, but Marcel Aitman, he's Mason Rudolph's security blanket. We had that his sophomore year. He was the guy that Rudolph would go to on a third down and medium and just throw up a 50-50 ball and he'd go get it. And we've had that again this year. Obviously, he was out in 2016 with a foot injury. He missed the whole year. And Rudolph didn't really have that go-to guy on a third down or when he just needed a confidence catch or a confidence throw.
Yeah.
And we have that again this year with Marcel Aitman. And he's turning himself into somebody who could be a really good pro. And, you know, I think he's a sixth-year senior this year. So he's been around the program a long time. He's had a lot of different quarterbacks and seen a lot of different teams. But I think having his experience and leadership, I think he's the second most important player on the offense.
Well, I mean, I think that's a good point because everyone talks about James Washington and obviously because he's a phenomenal talent and should be, from my estimation, when he goes to the draft, he will be in probably a top 10 to 15, depending on what people need, just because he's that type of a talent. But I got to ask you about Justice Hill, because I feel like what's been different for me this year watching Oklahoma State is a run game that is actually pretty consistent. I don't know. It's been a little hit or miss depending on the game, but like for the most part, the run game has been consistent. How has that played into the offensive game plan? Because that scares me.
Well, it's made Yeah, say it's made Oklahoma State less one-dimensional. In 2015, the offensive line was terrible, so there was no run game whatsoever.
Right.
And we had a great running back in Chris Carson, but he had nowhere to run because the offensive line was so inexperienced and just flat-out bad. So we had to rely on Mason Rudolph to throw, and once teams figured out, oh, Oklahoma State can't run the ball, we're just going to drop 8 or 9 DBs, and Mason Rudolph had nowhere to go, especially as an inexperienced quarterback. Last year, Chris Carson gets hurt, and Justice Hill comes in, and he just lit it up immediately. He set the freshman record for Oklahoma State in rushing yards, and then this year he's leading the Big 12 in rushing yards at 750. Mm-hmm. He has 6 100-yard games this year. He's just been a compliment, and with him we've been able to find balance in the offense, which is something that we haven't seen at all really in the last few years. And I think that's where his impact is the most, is that he takes pressure off of Mason Rudolph when you have a consistent run game.
Well, like I said, that scares me just because I know that's what West Virginia tries to do, and we've struggled with that the last couple of weeks, but it's something that Oklahoma State has very much established this year. I got to know, though, have you tried the Gundy mullet look on yourself?
No, I have not. I commend him, and I absolutely love it. He can rock it. But no, for one, I don't necessarily have the hair to possibly do that, and two, I don't think my girlfriend nor my family would appreciate me doing it. So I will appreciate him doing it and love it from afar.
good plan. I know he has kind of gotten out of his shell a little bit this season. At least from my perspective, because I'm not saying he's not a crazy kooky character, but he seems to have broken out of his shell a little bit. This 2017 year, it's been fun to watch the mullet, the taking the shirt off. It's entertaining, I'll say that much. But speaking of head coaches, I mean, obviously there's always a lot of talk. Oh, Dana, you know, coached at Oklahoma State and all this. But I mean, you have to be lucky that you have a guy like Mike Gundy who's been able to keep a steady ship for so long. But yet, there are Cowboy fans who get very frustrated with him very quickly. Is it because they're just stupid fans, or is there an underlying reason that we on the outside don't know about?
You know, that's a really tough question because at least from my perspective, obviously I've grown, like I said before, I've grown up a Cowboy fan. So, I mean, and from the time I really started watching football, it's been Mike Gundy at Oklahoma State.
Right.
And I love the guy, and I think that he's going to stay at Oklahoma State. I don't see him leaving. I think he'll retire here. I love him as a coach and as a motivator and just as someone – he's someone you want to play for. And I think there's a lot that goes along with that. We've been able to get incredible players there. And I go back to the rant, you know, 10 years ago, the I'm a man, I'm 40. That was the turning point in the program because, yes, people saw him and went, he's someone who has my back. He's, you know, the parents are like, this is someone who's going to defend my kid. This is someone right. I want my son to go play for. So I think that goes a long way in being able to get players and, you know, motivate players and just have fun because you have a guy who knows how to be serious and when to get, you know, when to get things done and when to, you know, buckle down, but also someone that's just relaxed and having a good time. And I think that's the right balance. This is the most relaxed I've ever seen Mike Gundy, which is a good thing, I think. I think when you have a coach that's not so tightly wound, you're going to have a little bit of a better team because they're not so uptight as well. They feel they have to be perfect and they can't make a mistake and things like that.
Well, like I said, consistency. He's guided y'all to, you know, 9-10 win seasons for the better part of his tenure. Obviously, you're on pace for that this season. 6-1, 3-1 in the conference, you know, still in the mix for both a Big 12 berth and or a Big 12 championship game berth and possibly by extension a college football playoff berth. But do you feel like expectations have been met so far, or do you feel like there's still like the discussion is, no, we got to make the Big 12 title game?
I think expectations haven't changed. I think people are a little more cautiously optimistic now. Because obviously going and playing this game against West Virginia is going to be very tough. And then we got Bedlam, which obviously is a big game in itself, just with the rivalry, but that also has a ton of title implications. And now for some reason, Iowa State decided to mess around and be 6-1. And now going to Ames worries me even more. So, I mean, that's a four-game buzzsaw that Oklahoma State has to get through. But I think if they get on the other side of that.
Too, It's like,
oh my God, I don't know where that came from.
I jokingly said at the beginning of the season, I was like, you know, we need Iowa State to be competitive because, like, we want the Big 12 to not just be this joke. And now I'm like, wait. I said
not
competitive.
Now.
I didn't say good. Stop.
Right.
It's like, no, this is not your time yet. Stop.
Absolutely.
But this is the start, though. Like you said, you've got us at away. You've got Bedlam. You've got Iowa State. I mean, you've got a lot of really tough games coming up. I mean, can you get through that undefeated? What happens if you take a loss? I mean, what as a fan, what's going through your head as you're looking at this upcoming slate that you guys have?
I know that at least if we lose one game, we're playing for the Alamo Bowl. That's it at that point. There's no chance you're going to get to the conference championship unless absolute chaos breaks out. They can go 3-0 in the stretch. Do I think they will? I don't know. I've watched Oklahoma State beat OU like I think three times in my lifetime, something three or four times maybe.
Yeah.
So you can't really feel confident going into that game, at least as a fan. I think this team is fully capable of beating OU. OU has not looked good in conference play at all, and really since the Ohio State game, to be frank.
They, no, they haven't.
So, yeah.
They have not.
And so, but going to Iowa State worries me. I'm praying for an 11 a.m. kickoff there because if it's a night game there, I'll just have flashbacks to 2011 and probably not watch the game.
Well, let's talk about this kind of Big 12 as a whole. Obviously, we've got like, what, four teams sitting with us at 3-1. It seems like we haven't figured out who the best, I mean, obviously TCU is looking on paper the best team in the conference, but there's no real clear cut winner to go and be TCU's opponent in the Big 12 title game. Who do you think that is right now?
I think it's one of the, I think it's whoever wins Bedlam realistically.
Fair point.
I think it's whoever wins Bedlam. And I think, if OU, I think OU has, they have a very realistic possibility of winning out. I think they'll beat TCU. I don't believe in TCU. I really don't. I think Kenny Hill is bound for a regression towards the mean at some point. He's never been consistent or this good as a starter ever. And I don't know if he's turned a corner or this is an anomaly. So I don't know how much longer TCU will be able to hold on. I was very low on them at the beginning of the year. I just never really believed in them. Now, obviously, they came in and punched us in the mouth at home. So they're obviously way better than I expected, but I just don't see them going undefeated.
Well, I still think even if they lose to Oklahoma, I think they're in the Big 12 title game, to be honest. I mean,
absolutely. Well, they would have the tiebreaker if OU wins out.
Yeah, exactly.
Over Oklahoma
so
State.
It's real tough. The next question, though, and this was something that – and I live in Atlanta, so I get SEC Network, and unfortunately they believe that if it's not the SEC, it's not real football. And they asked the question, do you think the Big 12 can still get a New Year's Six appearance, even though, you know, we don't have a direct tie-in this year? And they said no, and their reasoning was because they don't think a Pac-12 team will get into the college football playoffs, so they think the Pac-12 will get two New Year's Six Bowl berth, but
no way. No way.
Okay. Thank you. I'm glad that someone else is like, no, because if you don't get one, who else is going to go?
I mean, I think the Apple Cup winner is going to get a New Year's Six,
but the loser
I don't think you take it. You don't take a two loss Washington or Washington State. You don't take a two loss USC. USC might get a New Year's Six just because they're USC.
Right.
But
I mean,
that would be just stupid.
Okay, I'm glad. I just needed someone else to like confirm that was this crazy SEC bias.
No, that's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard, quite frankly.
I'm glad that someone else agreed with me because I'm like, there are still 12 slots. Like, what do you mean? Like, we're not going to get our runner up from our conference championship game in a New Year's Six?
Yeah,
but, I mean,
absolutely.
If it's y'all or Oklahoma or TCU, if it's you, Oklahoma or TCU, that's a big enough name draw to bring someone somewhere. In my opinion.
Exactly.
And I don't think either of y'all will have more than two losses at that point, depending on how it all shakes out. But I mean, I just thought that was crazy. I guess final question before we wrap it up, obviously we got to know, Where, if I'm going to Stillwater next year, say, where is the one place I need to go get food in Stillwater?
I mean, obviously the big, you know, draw is Eskimo Joe's. If you ever watched an Oklahoma State game, basketball, football, whatever, they always show the plate of cheese fries going, you know, to the table. And they are amazing. But I'm going to go to Hideaway Pizza. That's my go-to spot. It's been there. It's a Stillwater staple. It's, you know, the original store is there. It's kind of a chain around Oklahoma now, but really good pizza. That's my spot. Eskimo Joe's is really more of a touristy place now, not necessarily, you know, a student hangout place. And Hideaway's kind of the same way, but quite frankly, I love pizza and I could eat it any time of the day. So that's where I'm going.
All right. I like that. That's a good shout. Are they open for brunch on Sunday? Because, like, I found pizza on Sunday. It's like the best cure for a hangover.
Oh, absolutely. I'm pretty sure you could find that. I think they're open around 10 or 11. So yeah, I think you'd be good there.
That's awesome. All right. I need to go out to Oklahoma. I know everyone talks about Texas and like Austin, but like, I'm not as much of a hipster as some people want to be. And I don't think I would fit in Austin. So I feel like either Norman or Stillwater would be a little bit better. I mean, I go out in Athens, Georgia all the time. So I feel like Norman or Stillwater will be a little bit more my speed.
Obviously, my bias is Stillwater. Stillwater's a fun place. I mean, all the bars are right on one street. You know, everything's pretty, you know, compact right around campus. So it's not a bad walk from the stadium. It's like, I think from Boone Pickens Stadium to the Strip is maybe 10-minute walk at most.
Okay.
So if it's a night game, you're right there.
Is there a dorm named after T. Boone Pickens? Because I feel like every, like, there's a building at Oklahoma State has to have something T. Boone Pickens on it.
No, not everything is T. Boone Pickens. He does have a thing in the geology department, but other than that, no, not everything is named after him, surprisingly.
Okay. Well, I've been led to believe by all the news and TV that I've watched of Oklahoma State that he just runs everything. So I'm glad that we got cleared up.
Yeah.
All right. Last question, and then I'll get you out of here. All right. So the Cowboys are 7.5-point favorites on the road in a noon game in Morgantown. You have a two-game winning streak over the Mountaineers, but in your mind, how does this game play out? I mean, what do you see happening here?
Like I mentioned at the beginning of our conversation, I think this is going to be like a 12-round fight. I think this one, the defenses are going to have their time, and I think the offenses are going to have big plays. It would not surprise me to see David Sills get a couple touchdowns. The dude's a freak. We have young corners, so I bet he'll expose, you know, one of them. And even though they're getting better, he's had such a good year. I think he'll have a good game. I think Will Greer's going to have a good game. I'm going Oklahoma State 34-31. I think it'll be a late touchdown for Oklahoma State that'll do it. I had a hard time picking Oklahoma State, but at the end of the day, I just think I think the offense is going to rebound this week. But I don't think Oklahoma State's not going to pull away. This game is either going to be very close or a blowout either way. But I'm going close game. I just
seem to think
I don't
it's going to be like in the 40s. I don't think we're going to reach 40 for either team, to be honest. I feel like they're evenly matched.
I agree. I think this is going to be a really good game. It's going to be an entertaining game for people that aren't West Virginia and Oklahoma State fans. For us, we'll be sweating it out, getting gray hair watching it. But I think this will be a really good game and a really fun one to watch.
Well, I appreciate your prediction. And again, this is Joel Penfield talking to us. He represents Cowboys Ride for Free. You can watch his 2-minute drill. What day does it come out? Because I always seem to catch it like on a retweet or something.
And it's usually on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday around 6.
There you go. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 6 o'clock-ish on your Cowboys Ride for Free Twitter, Facebook, Periscope, all that good stuff. Joel, I appreciate you joining us, and if you're ever in Morgantown, let us know. We will hook you up with some good food, good alcoholic fun, all that.
All right, thank you. I do have one question before we go.
Absolutely.
Over under 3 Red Bulls for Dana Holgorsen on the sidelines.
You know, okay, so everyone asked me about Red Bulls for Dana. I think Dana has turned a new leaf.
Really? Okay.
I'm not saying he's staying away from energy drinks.
No.
But he's found, like, these canned Gatorade energy drinks that he has taken – that seems to be his new thing. So probably –
All right.
I would say 3 or 4, depending on how –
I'm afraid he has too many of those. And without fire he is on the sideline, I'm surprised. I mean, his heart's not going to, you know, beat out of his chest. He continues with that stuff.
Well, I feel like he now has a good release. Now that he's not calling plays, he can just yell at the refs whenever.
So which, I mean, he does that anyways, but yeah, it's more fun.
Right, but now he like has like free reign to do it. It's great. It's the best thing that has happened to him. It's honestly the best thing that's happened to Dana Holgorsen at WVU was getting this last contract extension, and now bringing in Spavital. Because ever since he got his contract extension, he has been like zero fucks given and just says whatever he wants and does not care. And it's the best because we need more of that in college football. We need more of that.
Absolutely. You need coaches with great hair and that just don't care.
They
didn't intend for that to rhyme, but it did.
Absolutely. But it was perfect, and I think we both have a good hair, don't care type of coach.
Right.
Because Gundy does not care what the media thinks of him at all.
Oh, absolutely not. The man took his shirt off in front of a bunch of students, and he really wanted to do it.
Yeah, he wasn't goaded into it. He was like, no, I'll do it. It's great.
Yeah.
I love that. I think that's hilarious. Well, again, I appreciate you joining us on the Smoking Musket podcast. Again, you can check out Joel on all the Cowboy Ride for Free. I mean, they do great work. They're good. They're a good SB Nation site. I'll tell you, if a site in the Big 12 isn't good, they're a good one. We appreciate working with them. So again, thank you very much, and enjoy watching this game on Saturday.
All right, you as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So again, that was Joel Tenfield from Cowboys Ride for Free. Really good insight into what has been, I don't want to say it's a good rivalry, but it's been a very hotly contested game since we joined the Big 12. Again, this is the West Virginia-Oklahoma State game that we were previewing that will kick off at noon in Morgantown. So Joel predicted a 34-31 win for the Cowboys, but I think I can sense some nerves in his voice when he said that. So stick around. We'll join back up with Mike on the other side, and we will really get into our breakdown of the WVU Oklahoma State game.
It's astounding. Time is fleeting. Madness takes its toll. But listen closely.
Not for very much longer.
I've got to keep control.
I remember doing the time warp, drinking those moments when the black pit would hit me and the boys would be calling. Let's do the time warp again. Let's do the time warp again.
It's just a jump to the left.
By Godders, that was Joel Tenfield from Cowboys Ride for Free, dropping some knowledge on us about this Saturday's opponent, the Oklahoma State Cowboys. A 5-2 WVU team is on the cusp of bowl eligibility, and we are welcoming Oklahoma State to Morgantown on Saturday, October 28th, for a high noon showdown at Milan Pushkar Stadium. This kind of has a little bit of a feel like a Wild West shootout, does it not? I mean, both teams are averaging 43 points a game and both averaging well over 500 yards a game. Oklahoma State, 6-1, got that number 11 in front of their name, but we've got a number 2 and we're 5-2. So definitely two teams who have been successful throughout the season, both 3-1 in the conference. Mike, this has the billings to be a really good game, but it's at noon. It's kind of a weird time.
It does, and everybody's expecting a shootout, but it's going to be really funny when we come out for, like, the first half and both teams are just like, I don't want to be here. And it might be, like, 7-7 or something at halftime. Like, this is one of those games where it's just going to be something stupid's going to happen.
Yeah.
You can count on
well,
it.
Well, I mean, look, it was 17-6 at the half against Baylor, and honestly, that was just because we had a really nice – like, we got a little bit lucky on that final drive of the half against Baylor, but that could have been 10-13-6 at halftime. And Oklahoma State's coming off a game where they scored 13 points against Texas. They won 13-10 in Austin. That's not an Oklahoma State ball game. Clearly these teams have shown glimpses of being well-rounded, right? Like West Virginia has proven they can play defense on occasion. They've shown that offensively they're very dangerous. Oklahoma State is actually averaging like less than 25 points a game or something crazy like that. Like they're actually not giving up a whole lot of points. They're giving up a decent amount of yards, not a whole lot of points.
Does this game have, like, this game kind of has a sneaky, it could be, you know, a 27-28 ball game. Like, it could be that.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I think really anything you're expecting about this game, just go ahead and throw that out the window. Because these teams are just... Oklahoma State came on so hot to start the season, and then they've kind of, I don't know what's going on with them, and it doesn't seem like their fans know what's going on with them, because they're, I think a lot of Oklahoma State fans are kind of worried about this game just as much as we are. So really,
we know one thing, and that's that this game matters a lot in the conference.
Oh yeah, this is huge. I mean. We control our destiny. I mean, when people say that, it's kind of a dumb phrase, but we actually control our destiny because all the teams that are ahead of us.
Both teams do. Both teams control their destiny.
Right. And all the teams that are ahead of us, other than TCU, which is setting at number one, we don't need to be number one to get into the conference championship game.
Nope.
But to get into that number two spot, we've got Oklahoma State, Iowa State, Oklahoma, and Texas all in front of us. So we can get into that number two spot. We just have to beat those teams. Really beat, three of those teams? Maybe two of those teams, and we're in that spot. Because they're going to take each other out. I mean.
Well, I think of all the teams at 3-1, the one that stands the best chance to run the table, I think, is Oklahoma State. Not because their schedule is easy, because it's not. It's very similar to ours, where it's like you've got a couple of tricky games in there. But I do think that Oklahoma State has the kind of willpower and mentality to go through this season. I mean, they've got us, Oklahoma at home, at Iowa State, and then they finish up with the two Kansas schools. So the two Kansas schools being the last two games on their schedule helps them out tremendously. Yes, they have three tough games at us, home against Oklahoma, and at Iowa State. But if they can get through those with maybe one or no losses, then I think they're the ones who are going to go into the Big 12 championship game. But we've got a good chance, too, because if we run the table, and this is just pure conjecture, I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm just looking at this from an objective standpoint. We're going to beat three other teams who have one loss in conference. So that would help us out a lot as well.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, either Oklahoma or Oklahoma State's got to lose next week. So that's another loss to them. Iowa State is – I don't think Iowa State's going to beat TCU this weekend. They might. That would be insane.
Iowa State – are they Icarus right now? Like, are we just trying to see how close to the sun they can get? Because we've had that a little bit in our time in the Big 12, right?
Oh, yeah.
Last year was basically an Icarus year for us, where it's like, yeah. Oh, JK.
If Iowa State beats TCU this weekend, I'll just go ahead and give them the second spot in the championship game. I'm done. I give up.
Oklahoma has Texas Tech at home. They go, like I said, they go to Oklahoma State. They are the only one who still has to play TCU, other than obviously you said Iowa State this weekend. But Oklahoma has to play TCU. Both West Virginia and Oklahoma State have got that loss out of the way. And yes, they both lost to them. But Oklahoma still has to play TCU. And to me, that makes their path to the Big 12 championship so much harder. Granted, I think of all the teams in the Big 12, Oklahoma is the only one right now who has that inside track to the college football playoff, because if they go to the Big 12 title game and win, they're in because of the Ohio State win. You know, obviously TCU, if they go undefeated and win the Big 12, they're in. I don't think that's a problem. But, like, of all these other teams, I think Oklahoma is the one that has that, like, if they take care of business, they're the one who's going in. They could – I'm not saying they'll get in with two losses, but I could almost see them at 10-2 if they win the Big 12, so that's 11-2. If their losses are to TCU, which they avenge – and Iowa State, but they still have that. They have a one win over TCU in the Big 12 title game, and that win over Ohio State. Maybe they sneak in. Maybe
they're right there in the conversation. That's assuming Notre Dame's not like.
Shut up. Let's talk about it.
Yeah, this season sucks.
Don't talk about them.
This season sucks.
Notre Dame. Why can't we have 4-8 Notre Dame again? Like, that's the best. We have 0-7 Baylor, but the people need 4-8 Notre Dame.
I hate when Notre Dame does well. If you want something that'll make you happy, I saw something yesterday. I think it said, like, Pitt has been in the last however many years. It was like 4 or 5 years or something. Pitt's been ranked like 3 times, I think. And they've had 8 coaches in that time frame.
Yep.
So Pitt sucks.
Pitt. Yes. See, there you go. Pitt sucks. And, hey, look, we all rooted for Oklahoma State at least once this year. And that was when they beat Pitt. Stomped Pitt, like 75-2. That's made up. It was like 59-21. But I like 75-2 a lot better.
Oh, here it is.
Well,
for factual, you know, to get it factually right. Pitt's been ranked for 4 weeks since September 11th, 2010. They've had 8 head coaches in that same time frame.
good on you, Pitt.
They might have another one coming because they kind of sucked this year too.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think Narduzzi stays after this year. I mean, he got whatever. I mean, I don't want them to do well, but I would say Narduzzi stays for at least one more year. But here's the question: were there more fans in the stand when they played Oklahoma State, or did Oklahoma State score more points? Oklahoma State did score 59 points. Were there more than 59 people watching that game?
Okay, there were probably more than 59 people watching the game, but they weren't 59 Pitt fans. Because we know, like, other teams' fans go to these games more than Pitt fans. Like, there are
because
more West Virginia fans at Pitt games. Like,
yep.
Like,
I think we should have organized a trip up there. Like a small group, contingent of fans, because that was the weekend we played like Delaware State, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So like we should have been like, all right, cool. Listen, no tea, no shade, but we're gonna take like a couple hundred WVU fans and ship them up to Pittsburgh for this game, and we're all gonna wear orange and cheer for our Big 12 companion.
Like,
that would have been hilarious.
We could have got tickets for like 3 soda caps and a hot dog or something.
Literally. I mean, you could have gone out. Listen, you can go out and collect soda bottles, soda cans, or whatever other recyclable aluminum and glass there are. Turn them in at your local recycling center and get enough money to go to a Pitt game. See, this people have lost this ingenuity in America. They need to be thinking about this thing.
Who does Pitt play this week? I just want to find out how much tickets are going for right now.
I want to say they actually play they play Virginia at home.
Uh-oh.
Tickets are available from $8 at Heinz Field.
Oh, man.
And Virginia, this is the cool, like, this is kind of the cool thing. Virginia at 5-2 could beat Pitt to gain bowl eligibility and almost seals Pitt's fate of not making a bowl game this year, because Pitt is at 3-5. If they lose, they'll be 3-6, obviously. Virginia would be 6-2. So Pitt would have to run the table to avoid not making a bowl game.
Oh, man.
To make a bowl, they would have to run the table to make a bowl game, which
they have. I mean, they have Virginia Tech and Miami ahead of them too. That ain't happening if they lose
right this
week.
Right. So they have to, but at the same token, Virginia has Virginia Tech, Miami, and I think they have Georgia Tech on their schedule too. So it's like, oh, they kind of have to win to get to a bowl game as well. All right, let's go back to this actual game that we came on here to talk. We will talk. Listen, we'll talk about whatever you want to talk about. Obviously, hating Pitt is one of our favorite things to do. Okay, we have to talk about this guy because, and I talked about it with Joel in that interview, but like, got to talk about this kid named Mason Rudolph. When you want to talk about Oklahoma State's offense, the discussion for me begins and ends with Mason Rudolph. I know there's a lot of things in between about things about players who are better because Mason Rudolph is there. Mason has been there. He's a senior. I still don't understand how a kid from Rock Hill, South Carolina, went to Oklahoma State, but whatever. This is his senior season, true senior. He has thrown in his career for almost 10,000 yards. I said 1 million when I interviewed Joel, and I was kind of joking. I'm not. Like, that's a lot of yards.
Yeah, you were pretty close. I mean, he's thrown for just over 2,600 this season. He's right up there. Well, him and Josh Rosen are about even.
Now he's at 11,364 for his career at Oklahoma State, and he still has, you know, a quarter of a season left to play.
And in comparison, Will Grier has thrown 2,467. So he's thrown for 200 more yards than Grier has. And
this quarterback showdown is going to be kind of fun. Mason Rudolph is more of a true pocket passer, you know, read the, all that. Not that Will Grier isn't that, but Mason Rudolph is like a commander out there. He sets his, you know, he sets his ships to sail and he hits them in stride. Will Grier tends to just make things happen. He's a little more of the Brett Favre mold, in my opinion. But, Mason Rudolph has had success against West Virginia. He has one loss, that 2014 loss at, is it one or two? One loss. That 2014 loss in Morgantown, which was the last time that, you know, West Virginia, look, that was a big win for us. No, that was at Oklahoma State. My mistake. I'm getting my year. See, this is why I don't talk like this. My years get mixed up. but he has – Oklahoma State's won two in a row against us, obviously. He's put up big numbers in both of those games. Last year, obviously, was more of a story of how we were terrible in that game. But Mason Rudolph, how do you control what he does offensively?
I don't know that you can. You just have to keep them from scoring touchdowns, basically.
Right.
Because he's going to throw it all over you. He's basically what Pat Mahomes was. Maybe not as much of a scramble, backyard, sandlot kind of quarterback, but he's going to tear you apart with yardage. You're going to give up yards to Oklahoma State. You just have to stop them from getting touchdowns. Let them kick field goals. I'll take field goals all day long.
And the one loss I have this year at TCU, TCU's front four got after him pretty much all day. They definitely put a lot of pressure on him. Now, our front three/four, depending on how many we're bringing, maybe five or six, our front three have not done a good job necessarily of on their own getting to the quarterback. But when we bring pressure and if we can get to him, his completion percentage against TCU is down to 53.7. Now, he's averaging this season, his completion percentage is up at 66.5%. Like, that's really good. That's a really efficient. He's had games where he's hit, 70%. So if you can get him under 60 or around 60, you're going to have a better chance of winning, in my opinion. Like, we've got to keep his completion percentage down. And I think for me, that comes from putting pressure on him with our front three or four, depending on how many we want to bring.
Right. Yeah. We're just going to have to, you know, get called for some or get some holding calls going our way this time.
Well, there's that.
I mean, our defensive line played really well against Baylor. If you go back and look at the tape, I was going to make a super cut of all the holds, and I actually started it. I just didn't have time to finish it, and somebody will blame me and tell me I don't work hard enough or whatever. but there was our defensive line was playing really well. Like, Lamont McDougal was so good. For a true freshman, he's so good.
He is playing very well.
And there was just so many holds. Like, they couldn't get off the blocks and stuff, but they were there. If calls would have went our way – and the blatant holding calls would have been called, Baylor wouldn't have got back in that game because our defensive our defensive line was right there in their quarterback's face most of the time there. So that's going to be a big thing to watch. Is it going to be a fairly called game, I guess, this Saturday?
Well, I mean, look, there are holding calls on – there's a hold on every play.
On every play,
we all know that. We've watched enough football to know that. But I agree. There were, some that it was like, they're not allowed to do that. don't get me wrong. Any offensive line coach teaches their players to get inside the shoulder pads and hold. Like, that is blocking technique.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's how you do it. But there are someone's like, he is 3 feet away from him and his arm is still out there and there's jersey coming behind. Like, how is that not a hold?
I don't. Oh, man.
Big 12 refs, man. Big 12 refs.
But again, Mason Rudolph begins and ends this conversation. But I, for me, and Joel disagreed a little bit with me on this, but for me, the second best or second most important player on this Oklahoma State offense is Justice Hill. He leads the conference in rushing, 750 yards, only five touchdowns, but his ability to run the ball efficiently is what has made Oklahoma State's offense so good. They like lead the nation in total offense. Lead the nation in total offense. They're good. They average 584 yards a game. That's the most of anybody. They're running 528 plays a game, which is up there. It's not as much as some other teams, but 526 plays a game is good for Oklahoma State because they're scoring a lot. Other teams are like, you know, they're running a lot of plays. They're not scoring a whole lot. No, Oklahoma State is putting up a lot of numbers with not having to run as many plays as some other teams. They're still running a lot of plays, don't get me wrong. But Justice Hill, for me, has been the difference for them this season because he has been able to, I mean, he averages more than 5 yards a carry. So you know that if you can get 5 yards on a carry, that makes your passing game so much better because you don't have to go long every time. He's also been really effective out of the backfield with 128 yards receiving. So for me, Justice Hill is the player that we definitely have to keep in check because if we let their run game get going, that's where we're going to have problems, in my opinion.
Yeah. If they get their run game going, that's going to open up the passing game for them too. Because yeah. we can't focus on, you know, stopping the run because then they're going to eat us up.
No. Well, and honestly, this defense this year, I don't know about you, but this defense hasn't shown a huge ability to stop everything. So I almost feel like we have to pick one or the other. We can't defend against the run and the pass in this game, can we?
I don't think so. Oh, man. I don't know if we're better at stopping the run or passing. Like, we started out okay, defending passes and stuff, but then Kenny Robinson got hurt, and we had to go with the backup at corner, and they've kind of ate us up. They've attacked Elijah Battle.
Yes, they have. Elijah Battle has been the weak link this entire season.
He's
frustrating because he's not a youngster.
No, and I remember, last season, it seemed like he was a lot better last season. So I don't know if it's just...
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I don't know. He might just hit a slump or something. But he's teetering on, Pat Miller territory. Third in battle.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. We've done better with giving up rushing yards, but we're still almost at 200 yards a game giving up on the ground. That is really not okay because a lot of that comes from our horrendous play against Delaware State and Kansas, but TCU had success on the ground. It's not like Texas Tech didn't. I mean, they had decent success on the ground as well. Every team has found success running the ball against us. I am concerned that we're not going to be able to stop the run, and no defense is good enough to stop the pass against Oklahoma State. Not even TCU. Reminder, Oklahoma State still scored 31 points in that game. Okay? They still scored a decent amount of points. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, and then what happened to Oklahoma State last week? You said they scored 13 points. Is that what? I don't remember.
13-10. They lost 13-10. They beat Texas. I don't know.
It's so weird.
the weirdest. And Rudolph's numbers were kind of okay against Texas. The offense still put out a lot. It was weird. It was so weird. I watched the end of the fourth quarter of that game I got to watch. And it was neither team was able to put it together. It was big play, nothing. Big play, nothing. Nothing. I mean, so it was really inconsistent.
It kind of gives me hope because, it's not like Texas is the greatest defense.
No, I think they're one of the top four defenses in the conference. Maybe top three, but their offense certainly is nothing to sneeze at. And the fact that their offense was so inept and Oklahoma State was still unable to score points, that I think a lot of it was on Oklahoma State. I don't think it had everything to do with Texas. I think a lot of it was on Oklahoma State.
Yeah, so hopefully they just continue whatever happened to them last week. That carries into Saturday's game.
I mean, I hope so, too. Rudolph still had 280, almost 300 yards of passing, and Hill went over 100 yards rushing. So proof that they put up a lot, they can gain a lot of yards. They can put up a lot of points. I don't really think this is going to be a game where, you know, we either team wins by scoring only 30 points, but I don't think this game necessarily eclipses 40 points. And if it does, it'll be like 41 or 2 that wins it. Just because I think these teams in style are fairly similar and they both want to play complete football. Like Mike Gundy and Dana Holgorsen, I know that there are a lot of similarities drawn between the two. Obviously now we can talk about the hair, but Dana in his evolution to head coach Dana Holgorsen has figured out that he wants to have a good run game, play decent defense. And Gundy is was one of the few coaches in the Big 12 who understood that from the get-go. He wasn't always able to enact it, but I mean, he still likes to play defense. He wants a complete and total game. He doesn't want a 50-45 shootout, right? Like both of these coaches kind of are in that mold now.
Yeah. I mean, they're so different from, everybody says they're air raid, but they're really not air
raid. They're not.
No.
No. Dana as an offensive mind, I'm sure he would love to run the air raid. And I think that's one of the frustrating things about Spavital's play calling this year is that he has, in the past two or three games, he's regressed to that air raid when it's like, bruh, we don't need to do the air raid every time. One, I don't think our receivers are super great in that type of – like Gary Jennings is fine. Obviously, Sims and Sills are making good catches, but they're not air raid style receivers in my opinion. We have a stable of running backs who can run the ball. Like – I would not have a problem if we run the ball 25 times a game. I think we should do that. I think we should do more.
Yeah,
Gundy and Holgorsen feel similar in that regard, right?
Right. I think you kind of hit it there. Spavital's still stuck in the – I think – basically he's me if I play like Madden or NCAA college football.
Yeah.
Like I don't even mean to do it. I just find myself throwing the ball all the time. And then when I get down like 14 points or 10 points or something, I'm like, oh, shit, I should have ran the ball some. Like, I think that's where he's at. It might just be like an experience thing. Like Dana and Gundy both have the experience now to understand that you're going to have to run the ball. You can't just throw it every down or, you know.
Right.
I think it's just an experience thing with Spavital. Hopefully he learned his lesson after last week because some run calls would have been nice.
Well, there were a couple that it was like we just ran the ball for like 20 yards in three plays, and then we throw the ball, and then we decide to just abandon the pass after that, or the run after that. I'm like,
yeah.
I would rather you just run the ball and milk clock off in the fourth quarter when we just need to do that. But whatever. I'm not Jake Spavital. I don't call the plays. All right, so I the other thing we got to talk about here, obviously, James Washington and that receiving crew that is very good for Oklahoma State, Aitman and even Hill out of the backfield. I mean, James Washington is like he's a really good receiver who will be making a lot of money next year in the NFL, in my opinion. I mean, I'm not a pro scout, but like the dude is going to make money. He's got 2 years of plus 1,000-yard receiving, and with a decent day against West Virginia, will eclipse 1,000 yards as well this year. So do you just pick your poison?
I guess so. Like, you're not going to shut them down. That's nearly
right,
impossible. I guess you just got to key in on who you think is going to do the most damage and try to stop them.
Yep.
I mean, it's... it's a flip of a coin because either of those guys or any of those guys could just kill us.
Well, I mean, yes. The problem here is you've got some Oklahoma State guys who, quite honestly, they're just very good. They're very good. Technically, they catch the ball well. They use their body well to catch the ball. They're quick. You know, they're not like super fast, but they're pretty fast. And Rudolph knows how to use them. I think that's the scary part, is Mason Rudolph is that type of a quarterback who understands best how to use receivers. I mean, they have, let's see, Washington, Aitman, and McCleskey all have more than 30 receptions on the season, which is pretty good. They have a lot of guys who have been in the end zone receiving. They have it feels like a deeper wide receiver core than we do. And that's been kind of the scary thing for us this year, is how deep our wide receiver core can go. So when I look at this matchup of who's got better receivers, I give the nod to Oklahoma State. I don't know about you, but I give the nod to Oklahoma State.
Yeah, we have good receivers, but we have four good receivers, and that seems like it's it. And that really drives me insane. Like, we have to have somebody else step up, because, I mean, you can tell by the fourth quarter, and I think this was part of our problem, especially last week. Like, our four top receivers, they're dead by the end of the game, because they're in the whole game. And I know we've seen other guys come in. We've seen Drew Bowen come in, and Reggie Robertson's come in a couple plays. But that was early on in the season. And I remember after the Virginia Tech game, I saw something where I guess we had subbed in some of those guys. And I don't know if this is on Dana for not subbing him in or whatever, but I remember seeing Will Greer, you know, kind of got, I guess, a little upset because he wanted his guys in the game. So I don't know if this is like Will saying, leave my guys in, and, you know, the coaches are just listening. But, like, somebody else has to step up. Give those other guys a break, because they're gassed by the fourth quarter.
Well, and I think, again, that's where I think the run game can help. But also at the same time, like, you're going to have those wide receivers out there blocking.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we need better guys out there who can come off the bench and give one of our guys a spell.
I mean, like, there's plenty of options. Ricky Rogers needs to step up. Reggie Robertson's still a freshman, but he's decent size. I think he could come in and, you know, at least let somebody rest for, you know, a drive or something.
Yeah. We've got to get it figured out, just because it's becoming an issue, and we need to have the ability to have more than four guys who can catch a ball. And quite honestly, some days it's only three, depending on how well Caron White wants to play. And Marcus Sims, as much as he's done better, I'm not saying he's a one-trick pony, because he has shown the ability to catch the ball underneath, but he's not effective in that route. And if you take away that over-the-top pass for him, which Greer hasn't really been effective hitting him there, that's not necessarily a slight on Greer. That's just people understand what's happening. I don't know. That's been frustrating.
It seems like Marcus Sims can't catch a ball past the sticks. Like, it seems like every time Greer throws it deep to him, he can be wide open, and it's a drop every time. Like, I don't know if that has to be like a focus thing, like a mental thing on him. Just not focusing to catch that ball. Because, like you said, underneath, like in the short game, Sims is great. He catches almost everything that comes to him.
But that's not what we need him for. Because unless he can make one guy miss, and be gone, which he has done kind of okay at, like, he's not really that effective. Don't get me wrong. Like, I'm not mad at people catching the ball underneath. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying that Marcus Sims, the reason he's on this team, and we saw it early in the season, granted against opponents that weren't very good, beat people over top, catch the ball and go. We need that, especially this game when we're going to need to be able to score points.
Yeah, that's going to be a key, I guess. We need a complete game from the receivers. We need Marcus Sims not to drop passes. We really need somebody to step up and give those guys a break.
Yeah.
Even one guy stepping up would be huge. Because if we could rest Caron or Gary Jennings for a drive, you know, even alternating drives, if somebody comes in for two drives and one of them Jennings sits out, one of them Caron sits out or whatever, just to get some kind of rest. Like, that would be huge, because then maybe they wouldn't be so gassed in the fourth quarter.
Now, this is one area that I think we actually hold an advantage, and that's third down defense. We have been able to get teams – now, granted, we kind of fell asleep on this in the fourth quarter against Baylor, but we've been decent at holding teams behind the sticks. And Baylor had to go for it five times on fourth down. So we've had this all season. I feel like we've done a decent job when we can get teams. If we can force a mistake on first or second down, we're able to get teams off the field decently on third down. Better, well, not at like a top 10 or anything, but better than some of the other teams we've played. Oklahoma State has struggled at this defensively. So I think that if you're looking at one area that we can maybe be more effective on offense, it's that third down conversion. But where we have had problems this year is getting ourselves into third and long. And Oklahoma State's a good enough defense to be able to make you pay if you're at third and, you know, five or more.
Yeah. We have been pretty good on third down, I guess. I need to go look at what our third down defense has been. Well, I can't find it.
Nationally, we're ranked 29th with out of 107 third down attempts, opponents have converted only 34 of them. Now, that doesn't mean that they haven't been converted on fourth down or whatever, but, I mean, that's a decent stat to have where, especially because, look, teams run a lot of plays. So you probably think, oh, we can't get off the field. Well, that's because teams are running, you know, look, between Texas Tech, TCU, even Kansas, the Big 12 teams are running a lot of plays. So it just takes one out of three first down or third down conversions to drive, right?
So we have the second best third down conversion percentage defense in the conference. We're right at 31.8%. Texas is number eight nationally with 26.8%. So we're not that far off from where Texas is.
No.
So maybe that's where we can, you know, get some headway against Oklahoma State, because I mean, maybe that's what Texas did last week that I didn't see because I didn't watch that game.
But they were able to get, no, Oklahoma State punted a ton against Texas. And a lot of it was Oklahoma State not executing offensively, but part of that does come down to a defense who's putting pressure on a quarterback or putting pressure on wide receivers. So maybe that's the key there, is really try to get it. I think the key is get after Mason Rudolph.
Yeah. And I take that back. We're third in the conference. TCU is at number 10 nationally with 28%. Yeah. So, yeah.
That makes sense. Red zone offense, this is obviously a big thing, but we're doing fine. I think we have to make sure we're at 100% in the red zone. And we need to be scoring touchdowns and not field goals, you know?
Yeah, and we've really done a good job at that this year.
Yes, we have.
We've been able to break that red zone futility horn.
Yep. We, we've scored 25 touchdowns out of 29 total scores. So that's pretty good. We're scoring about 90% of the time in the red zone. That's good, but like, we have to score when we get into it. We have to score in general, but like, if we get in the red zone, we need touchdowns. Like, touchdowns this game.
And just looking at the stats, we might have the best red zone offense in the conference. No, Kansas.
Which doesn't make look, when you get in the red zone four times and you score four times, that's good, okay?
They've been red zone 19 times.
Yep. Yep. They have only not scored in the red zone one time. Granted, we've been in the red zone 32 times and have also been able to score not in the red zone. Because let's talk about our keys for this game real quick. Because we mentioned one, it's get after Mason Rudolph. Another big one for me is control the clock. And I know, I don't mean like, oh, we need to go on 5-minute drives, but it's like we need to have longer drives. Yes, everyone thinks that in these games like this, you are going to need to score on two or three plays. I disagree. I would rather be able to score on 7, 8, 9, 10 play drives to, one, give our defense a break, and two, to kill momentum, because when an offense can score in two plays, they don't get the rhythm that people think of, but you get momentum and you're like, oh, fine, we're going to go big. It really kills the psyche of a defense. I think if we can have those 10 play drives to wear down their defense and control a little bit of the clock, I think that will be one way to keep
our defense fresh and keep the scoring at a pace that we probably can surpass Oklahoma State.
Yeah, that might be like the biggest key of the game. We have to control the clock. We have to just control the flow of the game, the tempo, I guess.
That's a weird thing in the Big 12. I don't mean control the clock by Kansas State style. I mean control the tempo. Thank you. That's a better way to put it.
Because Oklahoma State's going to come in and they're going to try to just tempo the hell out of us, which we should be used to because we do the same thing. Not as much anymore, though. Like, I remember when Dana first got here, like, we were like one play
One thing that stuck out to me, though, in that Baylor game, that final drive of the first half, when we scored the touchdown, we weren't in a, quote, tempo offense. We were running a very normal speed of offense, but it was still very quick. When we can get first downs and hurry up and get plays called in real quickly, which I think is one thing that Dana not calling plays helps, I think we've been a lot more efficient. And it's not a hurry-up offense by any means. It's just a quick paced offense. We're going, okay, we're at the line. We got our play call. Here we go. I think that has been the difference of Spav calling plays, is that our tempo is better because we have someone who's just going at it, you know?
Right.
That's just my take on that. I think that's been where we've been a little better. But I don't know. Any other like keys that you think are out there for us?
Oh, man. We've got to get something going in the run game against them.
Yeah.
Because if we get something going in the run game, it makes us, you know, not one-dimensional. That's going to open up the passing. I mean, we've heard it a million times. We have to get something going in the run game to keep them honest, I guess. Because if they're dropping however many back, it's going to kill our passing game. And if we can't get anything going in the run game, if they can rush three at all times or whatever, it's just, I don't know. We got to have Justin Crawford, the early season Justin Crawford, the Crawford that was running 100 yards a game. And we need – Kennedy McCoy did a decent job last week, I guess. So we need one of those guys to really have a good game, I guess.
Yeah, I think that I think that's a big key for me, too, is we do need to establish a run game. And I think, again, that'll help when we try to get into those, you know, 7 to 10 play drives, because we're going to need to – I don't want Will Greer to throw the ball 10 times a drive. I don't, right? Like, we kind of want to have a little bit of balance on offense, even if it's 60-40 or 70-30. I don't know. So I agree. Justin Crawford needs to get over 100 yards this game for us to win. I don't think we win if Crawford doesn't have more than 100 yards.
Yeah, that sounds about right. The one thing that's really worried me this week.
Yeah, because it's been a noticeable difference. And in fact, I mean, Crawford wasn't in the game pretty much midway through the third quarter on. He didn't play last week. And I thought it was like, oh, is this an injury? And now it's like, no, it just was because he wasn't effective. So that's what happens. All right, any final takes before we give our predictions for this game?
Not really. I mean, I guess any take I have is going to go right around the predictions, so – unless you have something, let's go ahead and do our predictions.
No. Okay. All right. You give yours first, and then I'll give mine, because I forgot what mine was.
I really don't like this game, because this is another one where I'm going to be sitting in the recliner and just, like, ready to die. My gut tells me that West Virginia loses this one. I hate that, because I would love to see us beat them. I'm going to say – I hate this score. I'm going to say 31-24. That's what we've lost.
Yeah, that seems – yeah.
Just that's our, like, our death number, I guess.
And
what really – I guess what's tipping me off here is, when was the last time we won a big game like this?
Well, you could say the Texas Tech game, but, you know.
But, I mean, it didn't have the same
– No.
Like, this has so much more implications. Like,
yeah,
beat them and we're still in control to get, you know, number two in the conference and into that championship game.
Yeah.
I don't know the last time. I mean, we'd have to go back a couple seasons probably. I mean, what?
I mean, the last time, really the last time we won a big game was maybe the Kansas State game at home last year. But you know, Kansas State wasn't, it was big because we hadn't won, you know.
Right.
I don't think it was big in that regard. Oh man, maybe honestly, the last time we won a big game was when we beat Oklahoma State at home in 2013, that terrible season we had, you know,
what
those
year was
through us state. I think we had,
what year did we beat Baylor? Like,
well, that was 2014. Okay. So 2014, when we had, you know, the 9-3, you know, that was an okay season. Sure. That probably would have been the one year that when we beat Baylor and that kind of stuff, but we'll go with that one then.
Yeah. I'd say that was the last time we won a big, big game.
Yeah.
But this season,
yeah, I mean,
we have kind of been breaking all the trends this season. I mean, we beat Baylor in Waco. We finally beat a ranked opponent.
Yep.
So maybe
this is it.
Maybe this is it. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But I'm still feeling 31-24, and I hate that score because it's just it brings back bad memories of the season. But yeah.
I go with something like 38-35 or 34. I think it'll go one of two ways, and this is just going on how the season has gone. Either Oklahoma State will be up with about 2 minutes left with Oklahoma State getting the ball, and of course they drive down and score because they can, or we will be down with about 2.5 minutes left having to drive to score, and we will fail again.
Yep, that's the same situation that I'm thinking. Like, it's like we just run out of clock, basically. Like, we could have done it, but we just ran out of time.
Not as similar to that TCU one, but more similar to the Virginia Tech one, where it's like, well, we have to score a touchdown. We can't get a field goal, right? We have to score a touchdown, and we just can't do it.
Right.
That's kind of how I see this game going. So, sorry, Mountaineer fans. Two heartbreaking picks here from the podcast, but again, we try to be somewhat objective, and the numbers point to that. The over under for this game is 73, so that's a decent amount of points. That's, you know, 35 points a team, 36, more than 36 a team. I think that I think that could happen for sure.
So it's saying like 35-38, so which was right around what you said.
Yeah, I wouldn't put my money on that, but it's very plausible. I think we both think that this game could also just be like one of those weird, like, why didn't they score 30 points? Well, because. So that's that. Let's go around the Big 12, though. Let's make some predictions on some other Big 12 games. The other noon kick in the Big 12, Texas at Baylor. This game is on ESPNU. From Waco, Texas, McLean Stadium. Baylor is a 9-point underdog at home.
Baylor is 0-7, by the way. 0-7.
These are important facts. Texas at 3-4. As much as people freaking keep talking about Texas and how freaking good people think they are, they're 3-4. Shut the hell up.
But you know they're going to win this week, and it's just going to be
Texas back. No, they'll be 4-4, and they would have beaten Baylor, okay? I'm not writing home against the fact that we frickin' beat Baylor, okay? Cool, we won in Waco for the first time ever. Great. We beat a team who was 0-7. Like, good. You're 3-4. Shut up. Anyway, I think Texas doesn't cover, though. 9 points seems like a lot for Texas to have to win by.
Yeah.
I don't think they cover.
Yep, I'm with you there. I think it's going to be another one where Baylor, like, tries to get – where they do get close, but they just fall short.
See, that's the other thing. Baylor hasn't, like, been totally inept, right? Their first couple games, yes. But, like, once they got into conference play, they've been sneaky okay.
I mean, they almost beat us. They almost beat Oklahoma.
Right. And they weren't, like – Oklahoma State blew them out of the water, but it wasn't, like – other games they played, they've been in it for a while. Now, we had the chance to blow them out of the water, and we decided to not do it, but – anyway, I don't think Texas covers against Baylor in Waco. Sunflower State Showdown, 3:00 on Fox Sports 1. Kansas State at Kansas. Kansas State 3-4. Another kind of shocking everyone had Kansas State as like their dark horse to make the Big 12 title game. They're 3-4, 1-3 in the Big 12. They have done nothing since their loss to Vanderbilt, basically. But Kansas is 1-6, and they just keep getting to getting worse and worse and worse. Kansas State is a 24-point favorite, and I don't buy that because I don't know if Kansas State can score that many points.
That's what I was going to say.
Beat Kansas by 24, but it could very well be like 23-0. Like that very well might be what the final score is.
I mean, 24-0 sounds like a very Kansas State Kansas score.
Yep.
But if Kansas scores a touchdown, like, I don't think Kansas State's going to score 31 or whatever. Math right now.
No, that would be – yeah, I don't think they're going to – again, I don't think Kansas State can win by 24. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying that they won't very much handle Kansas.
And I'm
again,
really
– it could be like 17 or 20-0, and you go, yeah, Kansas State demolished Kansas. But it's like – but you didn't cover because 24 points is a large spread.
I'm really mad at Kansas anyways. Because how are you going to start the season and actually be putting up points, like averaging 30-some points a game?
Yes.
And now they've just scored off a cliff.
What? In the last three games, they scored
19 points. And that was all against Texas Tech.
Yep.
Like they didn't score any points against Iowa State, and they didn't score any against TCU. How you going to do that?
I don't know. Speaking of Iowa State and TCU, this is, to me, the marquee matchup outside of ours in the Big 12. It gets the marquee matchup because it's on at 3:30, and apparently I think this game is better. But number 4 TCU at 25 Iowa State. TCU at 7-0, 4-0 in the Big 12. TCU 5-2, 3-1 in the Big 12, finally in the top 25 for the first time in like a decade. TCU is a 6.5-point favorite. Now, this game is going to be a little weird, I think. And I don't mean, like, weird things are going to happen. I just feel like people think that this game is going to be a really close, hard-fought game. Call me crazy. I'm not buying that. TCU has shown time and time again that they are able to show up and put up, right?
Right.
That's just – I 6.5, maybe. I personally think they cover, obviously. But I don't think – I think that's generous to Iowa State, personally.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm buying into Iowa State. I'd like to see Iowa State win because I want to see if there's like an equivalent to Hilton Magic. I said it in my recap last week or whatever. If there's an equivalent to Hilton Magic, this game would be like the perfect time for it to show up. Like Jack Trice Stadium Magic. I don't know what you'd call it, but.
Well, that newly renovated, expanded stadium they have for all those Iowans to go watch football because everyone loves Iowa State football. I mean, granted, it's a 3:30 kick. People are going to be well lubricated and excited, you know. But I'm sorry, I just think TCU does they're doing everything well. Not saying that Iowa State isn't, but TCU has been doing everything well since the start of the season. Iowa State has been pretty okay. I mean, obviously they're 5-2. Like they're a good football team. This is not what I'm saying. And we need Iowa State to be okay. Like that's the thing. Granted, I don't want it to happen now, but like we need Iowa State to be somewhat competitive to make this Big 12 conference look a little better, right? Like we need that. But
right.
But
here's the thing.
TCU passes the eye test for me.
Yeah, they definitely do. But here's the thing that I just popped in my head. Like, do I actually want Iowa State to beat TCU? Like, I'm not sure I do because we play them next week. I don't want them coming in all charged up.
Right. Also, this is the thing as a Big 12 fan you do have to think about. And I don't always play into the whole, like, oh, we need to root for the Big 12. But, like, if you're a Big 12 supporter, it is in our conference's best interest to have an undefeated team playing for a conference championship. And that would give them the chance to play in the college football playoff. I said Oklahoma's the only other team who could possibly do it. Oklahoma State could as well because they only have one loss. But both of those teams would have to run the table. Now, it's completely feasible that TCU loses to Iowa State or loses one game along the way. still makes the Big 12 title game with a loss, wins it, and makes the college football playoff. I think that can still happen because I don't think we're going to get two from the Big Ten or two from the SEC. Sorry, I don't think that's going to happen. If we have a legitimate case for a college football playoff member, I think we'll get it this year. But our best interest is to have an undefeated team playing for a conference title, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm not a big conference solidarity guy, but I'm okay with TCU going undefeated. Like, I guess if any team made it, I guess I'd be okay with them. Like, I don't want to see Oklahoma State or Oklahoma in the
right. Here's the other thing, though, too. It simplifies things for us, right? If TCU just wins out, that makes everything else very simple for us. That just means that we need to take care of our business.
Right, exactly.
So that's the other angle to this is if Iowa State beats TCU and all of a sudden Iowa State is 4-1 and TCU is 4-1 and you know, there's a lot of teams at 3-2 and 4-1, that's complicated. If we have an undefeated team in the Big 12, that makes the second place finish much more feasible and easy. It's like a, hey, just beat the teams in front of you and you get it.
Right.
So that's the other angle from my opinion. But I think TCU covers. I think it's a 10-point margin of victory, or maybe around 10 points for TCU, in my opinion.
That sounds about right. So they cover.
All right. Yeah, they definitely cover. I think they definitely cover. Texas Tech at Oklahoma in Norman, 8 o'clock kick. Oklahoma is a 20-point favorite. This one I'm kind of buying on Oklahoma side, only because Texas Tech, they did not look good last week.
We
at all.
When we beat them, we just sucked the life out of them, I think.
Yes. They remember, was it Madden or was – I think it was Madden or one of the EA sports games. You know, like when you had your the sprint button and you like you only had so much juice? Right?
Yeah.
Like Texas Tech kind of ran out of juice, right? And it's like, oh, now you got to wait for it to recharge.
Yeah.
I don't think it recharged. You know, they ran out of juice against us. It definitely didn't recharge in time for last week. Oklahoma is a better football team all around than Texas Tech. 20 is a little bit much, but I think that sounds about right. It might be, you know, 50-30, but it definitely is over under 75. So, you know, they're clearly saying both teams are going to score a lot of points, but there's still a large margin of victory. So I kind of agree with that. I agree with what the numbers are telling me there.
Yeah, I guess I could see that. I don't know. Oklahoma hasn't looked great.
They haven't. Their defense has not looked good at all since beating Ohio State and holding them to like, you know, under 20 points. So
I mean, they gave up 41 to Baylor, 38 to Iowa State, 24 to Texas.
Yeah.
35 to Kansas State. They gave up 35 points to Kansas State. That's like,
yeah.
Kansas State scored 35 points.
It's like 50 normal people points.
So I don't know. 20 is kind of hard for me to buy into. I could see them winning by two touchdowns. I don't know if I can see them winning by three.
I guess my point is, if it's 55-35, it's not like they didn't give up a lot of points.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so that's what I'm looking at. It's like, well, okay, clearly they're going to score a lot of – both teams are scoring a lot of points. They just think that Oklahoma's going to make a couple of stops on defense and Texas Tech won't. But we'll see. We'll see if Texas Tech's defense that was, you know, decent returns or what have you. But those are the Big 12 picks. If you – just a reminder, you can listen in on Monday night. And I will run down through all the happenings in the Big 12 over the weekend. I'll give you the conference standings, and I'll give you the conference results. So that's another reason to listen to our Monday night show. So, Mike, any final thoughts before we head out of here?
Just call in that number we gave you. Let me find it again.
Yeah. So you can call tomorrow. You can call on Saturday or anytime during the week, you know, about your feelings about the game. Call in Saturday, 304-933-9880. That is the voicemail box that you can just leave a message. And if you do that, we will play it on the live call-in and review show on Monday at 8 o'clock. That will be Monday at 8 o'clock. And that number is 917 932 1765. So go ahead and, you know, write those numbers down. You can call in again, the voicemail 304-933-9880. And the live show number is 917-932-1765. We would love to have your opinions.
Yeah. And Saturday's game is like the perfect time to call in. Because I know you all are going to be like crazy. So yeah, we want your crazy voicemails. Like, we want like the ridiculous.
Yeah, like, we do. We will play them. You'll be on our show. It'll be great.
So like, right, when you get mad at the refs or whatever, just go ahead and call us and bitch the voicemail.
Yes. Don't blow up our mentions. Just call the voicemail. You'll feel much better, I promise. All right, so just to recap, Oklahoma State at West Virginia this Saturday, October 28th at noon from Milan Pushkar Stadium. You can watch that game on ABC. The Mountaineers are 5-2. The Cowboys are 6-1. Both teams at 3-1 in the Big 12. So this is really a big game when it comes to conference standings and all that. For Mike Miller, you can follow him on Twitter at WestByGod_. I'm Bart Keeler. You can follow me on Twitter at BartimusPrime19. Follow the Smoking Musket at Smoking Musket, or go to Facebook and like the Smoking Musket, and visit www.smokingmusket.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Smoking Musket podcast. And as always,
goodbye, buddy. I hope to find your dad.